So we'll go with Nicolas Mainville, then Mandy Gall, and afterward Mélanie Nepoche. So the next decision we'll have to take here as a committee is, you know, what time do we break? I still have 9, 20 minutes per group. That's 180 minutes, so that's 3 hours. So either we go to midnight or we reconvene tomorrow. My choice would be to reconvene tomorrow. No, or go to midnight. We're at your disposal. So I got a feeling from the room, so we'll see when we get there. Monsieur Mainville.
I have an even better solution. We just refuse a project and everybody goes to bed.
That was humor, eh?
Just a joke.
English humor?
Look, I'm bringing humor, and I'm even bringing some multimedia entertainment behind you so you can sit down and relax a bit. Thank you, Mr. Boisclair, Mr. President. I know that it's a long day. It's a lot of information. It's a lot of emotions, too, so I'll try to do this fast. And I'll do it in English because I really want to make sure that everybody can understand what I want to say tonight. My role here as an independent spokesperson for an independent organization is to bring maybe a broader view around this issue. As I said before, I'm a biologist and I work for Greenpeace. I've been working with Greenpeace for 7 years. And since 2010, Greenpeace is fighting alongside Waswanipi to try to protect this area. My presentation will not be about what we've heard from the Cree's perspective. I think it was very clear so far that there is many reasons why the Cree's want to protect this land. I will bring another perspective, maybe from my biologist hat and also with a broader approach. Greenpeace is 100% convinced that this project doesn't make any sense in terms of ecological impacts, but also in terms of economical viability. As you know, the Broadback Valley has been known for many years now as one of the key conservation opportunities in Quebec, and I would even say around Canada has been recognized as really a conservation hotspot. What is a hotspot? Well, it's an area that has really immense ecological value, but also has threats all around it. And when we talk about threats, I think this map really summarizes very well what we're talking about. These are satellite imageries made by Global Forest Watch showing what is the footprint of the industry all over the province. This image comes from 2010. It is a cumulative footprint that has been going on for many decades, and the footprint is moving higher and higher north every year, and you can see very clearly that there is a densification of operations, logging operations and role building in the northern section of the commercial forest, this northern section, of course, being the boreal forest and being also one of the last intact productive forest that we have in this province. So when we look at this footprint, I think it resonates how much there has been given to the industry. And I think it's very clear also that nobody here is against logging per se. Greenpeace is not against the logging industry. We are not against logging. But there are places where logging should not happen. There are places where we should recognize that there's more value with trees standing up than trees cut down. And I think we are here in one of those areas. When you look at the reverse image, this image comes from cumulative imageries from different satellites showing what is left intact in the commercial forest of Quebec. These areas in green are areas that are bigger than 500 square kilometers and that have never gone through major industrial activity. As you can see, there's not much left south of the northern limit. The latest calculation shows that 90% of the area south of the northern limit have been already cut or fragmented. The last 10% is actually not even shown on this map because these images, some of them are back from 2001, others from a little later. So basically what we have left across the commercial forest south of the northern limit is about 10% of intact forest. That is what the satellite imagery shows. It doesn't mean that what is not green is a devastated land with nothing in it. It means that it's a forest that has been impacted by logging or by fragmentation. It means that the structure of the forest has been influenced by industrial activity. It means that some species have gone away, and the composition of that forest has changed. It also means that, for example, the carbon stocks in those forests have been modified. So for us as an organization, these green patches in Quebec are the same green patches that we find in Russia, the same that we find in the Congo Basin, or the one that we find in the Amazon. These last intact forests are the most important places to save on this planet. And we have an opportunity in Quebec to play a leadership role. And that's what we've been trying to convince the government for many years now. Unfortunately, we're very slow at protecting it. We're slow at recognizing the importance of those forests. And I think when we have a conjunction of so many arguments, as it is the case for the broadback, it calls for leadership even stronger here on this committee. When we focus on the broadback, and you were talking, maybe asking questions about, you know, why you're saying this is 10% of your land, what are you referring to? Well, those green patches here are the last intact forest on Wissanippi land. These are the same satellite imagery, but I just zoomed in it. And you have the Mishigamish proposal with the black dot, and I apologize to Wissanippi Cree Nation, I don't have the tail. So I make the official apologies for not having the tail on this map. It's a shapefile that was a little older. But those images, the satellite imagery, are fairly recent. And, of course, we have the proposed roads. And we actually put also the older version with the longer extension there. When we talk about intact forest, Canada last year ranked number one in the world in terms of forest degradation. Canada is the worst country in terms of disappearance of intact forest worldwide. And it is, unfortunately, when we look at specific projects like this, that we understand how come it's going on. These projects have been moving higher and higher north, new roads, new logging, new encroachment on those areas. Now, when we look at what would happen in this intact forest, basically it's very simple. When you build that road, and this one here, you split that intact forest south of the broadback in three smaller pieces, and those smaller pieces are smaller than 500 square kilometer. They lose their intactness. This value of being intact is a forest that has enough space to let their processes go wild, just go free, without any interference from the industry. So small fragments mean more vulnerability, and also less resilience. So that's a huge issue when you look at long-term impacts on the forest. When we look at those forests, of course, we're talking about woodland caribou. And we have experts in the room, and I'm not going to talk a lot about caribou. I think it's probably, in terms of ecological impact, the most tangible one. But I just want to flag, why are we talking about woodland caribou? You hear about it a lot, and it's really a species that is extremely demanding. I think somebody was referring that, you know, there was woodland caribou in Mauricie 100 years ago. There are villages down south that are called Caribou because there was caribou there. Actually, 150 years ago, there were caribou at the border with the U.S. So the statistics that we were looking at 100 years ago are very different than what we're looking at now. So when we hear, for example, arguments saying, well, you know, there's more space higher than the northern limit for caribou, we could say, basically, let's wipe out the entire populations of caribou in the commercial forest, and then there's going to be some remnants of habitat up north. Then you would have 100% of caribous living outside the commercial forest. But then you would fail, we would fail as a province, as a forestry regime, and as an industry to recognize the importance of biodiversity, which is the second of those two crises we got to deal with. In Rio in 1992, there were two big conventions that were talked about, biodiversity and climate change. And the biodiversity crisis, this is a very tangible example of it. So caribou doesn't tolerate disturbances. It doesn't live when there are disturbances. They move away, and the science is very clear. Environment Canada has done a pretty intense job in measuring what are the thresholds. Those thresholds are measured. 35% is what is being recognized. And we have a project here that shows that even if we look at a bigger area, which is, I can't remember the area exactly, but is much bigger than what this project will impact, still, it means that if we build those roads and go harvest those areas with the cut blocks that are planned for the next years, 45% will be disturbed. That's already too much. So only for caribou, this project means that we want to wipe it out of the area. That's a problem that should be recognized by the COMECs. The other thing, I think that Chief Happy Jack mentioned it, we are just coming out of a huge climate summit where forests have been recognized as probably the best tool that we have left, the best easy solution to make sure that climate doesn't go haywire. And what a coincidence, we have the biggest carbon storehouse in the world in terms of terrestrial ecosystems on Earth. There's nowhere else on Earth, not in the Amazon, not in Indonesia, not in the Congo. It's here, probably right behind us, 500 kilometers higher north, in those areas that are still intact. Those are the areas where you have the biggest carbon storehouse in the world. So we cannot, as a society, just look at those carbon storehouse and say, all right, let's go harvest it. Let's go build roads. Let's go industrialize those areas, when we know that the direct impact of bringing those machinery there will mean the release of that carbon. There's a responsibility there. The other issue that, to us, seems extremely important is, how viable is it to go harvest the least dense forest in Quebec? This map was produced by the scientific community on the northern limit, and it shows the density of forest all across the boreal portion of the commercial forest. Everything in black is a no-go zone, not even interesting for the industry to go. It's too low density, too risky to harvest. Now, when you look at those colors here, 0 to 40% density is what, for the industry, is not profitable, is not high enough to make sure that when you actually invest time, money, resources, you will make money from cutting those trees. They are too far apart. There's not enough density to ensure that you're going to have a great income. Now, look at where we're looking at in terms of project. We're right in these areas where density is very low. Maybe it's just borderline. We've done some satellite imagery analysis with a firm in Scotland that showed that the average density for the area is 37%. Now, maybe there is an interest to go there. Maybe there is a what we call an effet de possibilité forestière, keeping the volumes for somewhere else. Maybe there's not even an interest to go there. But even if we were to really be interested in going harvest there, I think there's a question in terms of how long really this could be viable economically. And if we're talking about, you know, outcomes in terms of economical viability, I think we need to take something else into consideration that we haven't talked about today, and it's controversy. How a company will be able to build those roads, go harvest those trees, and try to sell them in their international markets if they know that there's no social acceptance of this project? How will the customers of large, how the large customers of those products, the companies buying paper, buying wood, and knowing that it's coming from the Broadback area, and knowing that there's a lot of attention on this area, how will they feel from buying this wood? This is a controversy that I don't think the industry can afford. This is a wrong investment to the wrong place. Now, we don't have anything against the logging industry. We don't have anything against the companies, although maybe some. But still, I think the project here at hand is not a good idea for the industry. It's not good for their reputation. It's not good for the forest, and it's not good for Quebec. So I would insist that you take this this opportunity and maybe echo what Romeo Saganash said. I think it's a great opportunity for the comics to show the seriousness of the comics. How when you have so many confluences of so many arguments against the project, I think it's time to make the right decision and say no. This is our opinion. Merci. Thank you. I would just flag
Can you just stay here? Because I have questions, and I guess I'm sure some of my colleagues do have questions too.
Of course. And I think there's many people that would like to say things. And as I said, everybody is tired.
I'm here tomorrow.
Invite people.
If you want to continue tomorrow, well, you're more than welcome, sir.
What I would like to do is invite people if they want. There's an online petition starting today on savethebroadback.ca where people can send a letter to the comics and share a bit of what we said today. It's a very simple letter, respectful, saying no to those roads, savethebroadback.ca, and then you have your message going through. Thank you.
Bon, je voudrais, merci. Thank you. Merci beaucoup pour cette présentation, Nicolas.
Thank you very much for this presentation, Nicolas.
40%, do you concur?
Insofar as the 40% is concerned.
40% of the economic viability of harvesting the resource in this area. Donc l'enjeu du 40% tel que présenté.
So the issue of the 40% that was presented, that would not be viable economically to log on that territory. No, we do not agree. We even had to log in forests that were denser and not as viable. So we are envisioning doing some forestry in those forests because they are economically viable.
In the big picture, Mr. Saganash a few minutes ago said that, you know, we have to consider the projects, even though they're not happening in the community, that have an impact on the community, and that is one actually of the principle that we see in the Beijing Convention. So, if I follow on his line, some projects that are not happening in the community and protection project will also have an impact in your community. It goes both ways, and my understanding is that this protection of 9,000 kilometers north of the Broadback is do you see that as an exceptional gesture and something that is relevant and going in a very good direction for the protection of the Broadback? So how do you account in your appreciation of the project the fact that there's a commitment to protect 9,000 square kilometers?
Yeah, well, we have to look at where those 9,000 square kilometers are. And when the agreement was announced, I think we flagged that it is a step forward. Unfortunately, about half of the new protected area was set outside of the Cree's area requested first. Second,
the Cree, which Cree? You're talking of pre-420P.
The Cree Grand Council, Namiska, and OJ, and Waswanipi, their proposal, when you look at the map, the proposal is outside of their requested area.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that why is it outside of their requested area? Who knows? I'm not going to speak for the government. But clearly there were, less pressure from the industry on this site because it's north of the northern limit, but also it's burnt areas, a lot of burnt areas that were protected. And so I think we can question the quality of the area that got protected when we look at just south of it, what you have amongst the best conservation opportunity you can find in Quebec.
Yeah.
Very old growth forest, caribou habitat, a lot of carbon, a lot of density, old growth density.
Who's better than the elected members of the community to decide what's good for their community? And that also includes the Cree Nation government.
Yeah,
signed the agreement.
Well, clearly, I think I'm not going to go into the two different positions from Waswanipi and the Grand Council on this one. I think if you look only on conservation perspective, what was protected in terms of quality of area, it is clear that there were much better areas to protect just south of what got protected.
But once once there's an agreement on the table, an agreement is always better than any kind of imposed decision. So who could I be as president of this committee to make a decision over and above, if I want to be respectful of the Cree reality and their elected spokesperson? Who am I to say over and above what they have agreed on that they made a wrong decision?
No, I don't think it's about making a wrong decision. It's about recognizing that that was just a step and that there's more to do. That clearly, if there's more logging in this area, caribou will be very badly impacted. That clearly, if the roads are built, this will encroach on a proposed protected area that hasn't been yet protected.
Okay, so help me understand. We've seen the map that I was pointing at a few minutes ago where, if you look around like events, there's 500 meters protection, and the proposal of the people from Waswanipi was 3 kilometers. So if you're saying that even though if we had full protection of the territory as asked by the people from Waswanipi, Greenpeace would be against the roads. Because the impact on the roads is very small. Obviously, it has an impact on logging. So would you, if you had full protection on the proposal of Waswanipi concerning protection, that you'd be opposed because of the roads?
I think if we look at caribou, and I'll ask the experts to talk, I think their recommendation is very clear. It goes way beyond the protected area in itself. That's one thing. If you're asking the position from Greenpeace, clearly our position has been the same for 5 years now. We consider that the whole area of the Broadback is an area that has so much value that we should put a hold on logging, a moratorium on logging.
What's your definition of the whole area? C'est le bassin versant?
I can provide you a map if you're interested. I'll give you a full report on why the Broadback is important.
No, I understand. But what do you call the whole area of the Broadback?
So it's an area that we call the Broadback Valley Endangered Forest. It's about 21,000 square kilometers. It's very well mapped. And it's c'est délimité par les forêts.
It is delineated by the intact forest. So that's your principle.
It's the northern part of the Lake Evans. It goes, it's a bigger area that has been recognized that we've been pushing. That's the position from Greenpeace. Now, what we're talking about here is not the Greenpeace position. It's what is at stake with those two roads.
But to get it right, if we were to give, to recommend the whole protection from that was Sprint P asked, you'd still be fighting this proposal that would be, and saying that the lumber industry is doing a wrong job and going on international markets. If we got to a proposal similar as this one that was presented by the people of Sprint P, we'd obviously see some kind of protection in the L, the piece of the puzzle that was missing, that you'd still go on markets and say that it's a bad proposal and you'd be asking for more.
I might be wrong, but I don't think your mandate is to designate a protected area. Your mandate here is to evaluate the impacts of those roads and to give a recommendation to the government if those roads should be built or not.
And to make some conditions also, if we decide to move forward. Every time this committee has gave a green light to projects, we impose conditions because we heard the people. Yeah. So we impose conditions.
Great.
And it's a go or a no-go.
Yeah.
We're not only here to listen, and we can be creative as a committee. And that's the strength of the committee, because we have some queer representative and some people from the Quebec government. And I try to make sure that, you know, I keep everybody happy, if I may say so. I think you understand what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
So always an ongoing conversation.
Yeah. Well, so to answer your question, I think the message that I've heard from the chief and many people is that there's no acceptance to those roads. It's not about protecting the broadback. The project in itself is not acceptable. That would be our position today. And I think if you want to impose conditions, it would be to refuse the project and impose a condition of protecting the broadback as it is requested by the Waswanapi people.
I understand you.
I have a question, and that is one of the things that strikes me is that we're dealing with what is out there now. It's finite, and the question that I'm going to ask is: Have you investigated the issue of the fragility of the Cariboo situation in terms of forest fires? Because I remember Harvey Fite came up here. When he first came up here, he did his master's study was in part a study of what the forest does. And he came to the conclusion that the forest burns everywhere about 120, every 120 years, something like that. So what happens if the caribou are in the valley and there's a forest fire that takes out a significant portion of forest in the Broadback Valley? How do we get around that?
Yeah.
I'm not using this to say that's going to happen, but all I'm saying is there's going to have to be, if the principle is that you want to preserve as much of the intact forest and the caribou, and you're going to have the ability or the partnership of Quebec to recognize that there are going to have to be changes made to the limits of the protected area to make it bigger, maybe, or to make it smaller for a certain length of time. But one thing sure is that it's likely that there will be some kind of forest fires.
Yeah. And I think it's actually one of the main arguments why protected areas should be big. It should not be small areas like we have. When you look at everything south of the northern limit right now, we have only 5% of the area that is protected, and it's mostly small patches spread out all over. So, of course, if a fire passes by, then you lose the quality of this area. I think fire is part of the ecosystem, and the goal of a protected area is not to remove yourself from natural disturbances, but you want to make sure that those disturbances will not change radically your protected area. So the bigger it is, the better to maintain the ecological integrity. So if you look at scientific literature, there's, I think, some recognition that the minimum size for a good protected area is 3 times your average natural disturbance. Now, we know that in the boreal forest, wildfires can take a lot of space. Some are really, really big. So recognizing this this scientific basis calls for a large protected area, and that's what we are missing right now. There are some progress, for sure, but the Seneca Park is not big enough in itself. The new section that has been protected has a lot of burnt area, and then you have a lot of water into this. So there is a need to do more, and I think that's why one of the main arguments is like the broadback is such a good opportunity to do the right thing. The Quebec government has recognized their goal to protect 12%, They were supposed to do it last year, 2015. They missed their target. We have to remember that that target was set 23 years ago in Rio, 24 now. And it was postponed, I think, five times.
What's the percentage now?
Now we have 9% of protected areas in Quebec, 9.16 for the whole province. But when you look at forest, it's about 5%. Because there's a lot of those areas that are higher north in the tundra and the taiga. So a bigger area will be the best shot. And if you want to invest your money into a good protected area, you might as well do it big and do it at the right spot. And the broadback is clearly the jackpot for that. And what's interesting, and probably Mr. Rudolph will say that, but there's clearly an opportunity for caribou too, because as you've seen, there's a lot of caribou north, there's some caribou south, and then there's roads coming. But the broadback on Waswanipi land is the best corridor you can find. It's still intact. It can connect the Nottoway herd with the Seneca herd. The Timiskimi herd is more on the eastern part. All those can be connected together if we protect it. But if we put a road right through it, then you split them in two. You lose your corridor, and you basically lose your best chance of saving that species. Now, it would be unfortunate that the COMEX approves a project that leads to this kind of result.
Well, there are already two or three roads that go through it.
Yeah, on the western side, there is. Then on the other side,
western,
of course.
Side,
yeah. That's why it's kind of stuck there.
Then there's the Route du Nord.
And there's a Route du Nord. And you've read the report from Mr. Rudolph et al. I mean, if there's one more kilometer of roads built, it's a big problem for caribou. And we know the risks are really high. So I think time to act is now, and decision should be, you know, in favor of caribou for this situation anyway. It's pretty clear.
D'accord. On a parlé un petit bout.
Before, with other interveners, we talked about the recovery plan for caribou. What do you expect from such a plan? Well, good question. First, it should be published, not like the other one. That was 5 years too late. But it is quite clear. We already know that there has to be two boreal forest protected area. We know the two areas. You have the White Mountains near Lac Saint-Jean. We know that there's a lot of caribou there. And also, of course, the Broadback Valley. Now, what will be the conditions in the plan? Maybe it is not the best place to talk about this. We presented the recommendations to the government. I could give them to you. Do you want us to talk about that, the different practices? No, the plan, of course we can talk about silvicultural practices elsewhere, but the broad lines. If you have a written position on this, we'll have a brief, and it will be put in reference. Thank you. Thank you.
On va entendre Tiger Rudolph, c'est ça?